Well, welcome back, colleagues. Hope you had a great morning tea and got to catch up with colleagues and friends. And it's great that we can be here together, and it feels like 2019, but better. It's really good that we can connect and have a lot of those conversations that we've been hanging out to have. I'd like to welcome Rhonda Livingston, the National Education Leader for ASEQA, and also recognise the great contribution that Rhonda's made to quality in the sector around the whole country, leading the training and leading the being at the edge of quality and helping particularly authorised officers get off on the right start in relation to their engagement with the sector. So welcome, Rhonda. Over to you.
For inviting me to be here, and thank you Sean and Claire and Kylie and the whole team. What a delight and how wonderful to be back and see people three-dimensionally, not just one-dimensionally on Zoom screens or Team screens. So lovely to be here, thank you. And we've just got 45 minutes together. What I was hoping to do was to have a look at the new principle in the approved learning framework, and thanks to Lisa for such a fantastic session, and to Jess and Teresa to set the scene in terms of the exciting initiative in terms of the refresh of the approved learning frameworks. I'm so excited about that, and I do agree with Lisa. It is just bringing the frameworks up in line with the practice that's already happening in the sector. And it's a hard act to following Lisa, because I know how wonderful it is to hear educators and service leaders put into practice work that's happening in the services. But I also just wanted to talk about a bit of a toolkit for those in the room who are educational leaders or service leaders, and also showcase some of the great resources that are available to support you in your very important roles. On your tables, you've got a workbook, just with some of the, so you don't have to take notes, just some of the key slides we've included. But also, as we work through the 45 minutes, I'd really like you to think about some actions that you can take away from today's session. Maybe something that Lisa said or Teresa said or Jess said in their sessions, or something in the toolkit. So if I can just ask, at the end of the session, we will invite you to think about some actions that you can take away from the session. And I'm really excited and delighted to be here on Ngunnawal land. And ASEQA is based in Sydney on the land of the Gadigal people. So I would like to take this opportunity to pay my respects to elders past and present, both for the Ngunnawal people for having me here on your beautiful Canberra lands, and also for the beautiful Canberra weather today, and also for the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation back in Sydney. I've included this slide, and it's in the workbooks, and I know that many of you know ASEQA's role very well, but we do sometimes get confused, and people think that we undertake the assessment and rating. We work really closely with our colleagues and our partners in the regulatory authorities, with Claire and Sean, Jess, Teresa and the team, and Kylie. But we don't actually undertake assessment and rating. As Sean mentioned, our team, my team, is responsible for training the authorised officers. Of course, they get lots of rich training and support from their regulatory authorities. But we play complementary roles with our colleagues and our partners in the regulatory authorities. And you've probably seen this screen up a number of times. But I did want to just reiterate what Jess and Teresa mentioned earlier about some of the really exciting initiatives that are happening. We've talked about the approved learning framework refresh, but also the review that started back in 2019. These reviews take such a long time by the time we get people's feedback and really think carefully about legislative reform to enhance quality in services, but also to support you as educators and service leaders in your services. So, nothing new there. We've still got the law, the regulations. The National Quality Standard isn't changing in the review. So some of you will remember it was updated in 2018. It's not changing in the review. The refresh of the frameworks has just brought it in line with contemporary practice. And we've still got the assessment and rating process. And you will have seen some refinements to the process being discussed as well. As you well know, the role of the educational leader is embedded in our legislative framework. This will be nothing new to you. It hasn't changed in terms of Regulation 118 that talks about the important role of the educational leader in services. And that the fact that the educational leader needs to agree to taking on that role, so it has to be recorded as part of Regulation 148. And of course, the role of the educational leader links really closely with Quality Area 1 and educational program and practices. And we'll talk a little bit later about some of the alignment that we're seeing in the data as well. And of course, you know it's embedded in the National Quality Standard. It's element 7.2.2. So nothing new there. Some of you who were around in 2012 will remember that in 2018 there was a bit of an update to the wording of that element, and it was around the educational leader being supported, not just nominated to take on that role. So building on what Jess and Teresa were talking about, I just wanted to highlight that there's a new principle, as Teresa mentioned, in the approved learning frameworks that relates to collaborative leadership and teamwork. So the early years learning framework, it relates to the collaborative leadership and teamwork. I think in my time, our place, it's around collaborative leadership. And it's the view of leadership that empowers all members of the team to use their professional knowledge and skills in ways that assist everyone to do the best they can for children and young people, their families, and the colleagues in their settings. So that's a direct quote from the Early Years Learning Framework. I would really encourage you to have a look at the frameworks if you haven't had a chance to do that. Isn't it exciting, isn't it fantastic that we've got a whole year to get our heads around it, to embed it, to think about improvements or enhancements that might result from engaging with those two frameworks. And as Lisa and Teresa mentioned, there's lots of really great resources. And there's a really useful little video that's a great starting point. It just highlights some of the changes that you might want to share with your service team to get the conversation started about the changes to the frameworks. And I did just pull out from the Early Years Learning Framework some of the descriptions and the identity, the tips in terms of embedding that new principle in your work and in your services. It's about shared responsibility and accountability. It's about that positive work culture. It's about a professional philosophy of cooperation and collaboration. As we know, the importance of being a leader, having a collaborative approach, a distributed leadership approach is often used in services. And it's about having those respectful conversations in your teams about practice and supporting educators and teams come on the journey
in terms of quality improvements and informing service decisions as well. And of course, it's about supporting a culture of peer mentoring and sharing learning, where all team members contribute and facilitate each other's professional learning and growth. Thank you.
I suspected that they purposely didn't get the microphone to work, because usually when I get the microphone, I like to sing a karaoke. Thank you. I've just also, you've probably seen the snapshot. CEQA does a quarterly snapshot, and the most recent snapshot is up on the CEQA website. But what we're seeing when we look at the data around assessment and rating is there's a really strong correlation between quality area 1 and quality area 7. And to me, that's not rocket science. It makes sense that if you get it right in terms of educational leadership, then it all falls into place in terms of quality area 1. So it's a really important role, I think, that you have in supporting educators to embrace the frameworks and embrace the standards and regulatory standards. And of course, in terms of quality area 1, we all know that a quality educational program enhances and extends each child's learning and development. One of the key reasons we're all here today is around children's learning and development. But it also recognises children as capable and competent. And that's one of the things that I most loved about the National Quality Framework. Because as you can tell by the colour of my hair and the wrinkles on my face, and I've been around for a long time, and when I did my training 100 years ago, it was all the sort of deficit model, looking at children's needs and how can we can help and support children and how we can scaffold their learning. And now that that change to seeing children as capable and competent, able to make choices and decisions and influence their world is really exciting for me. But of course, it's also building on children's knowledge, strengths, ideas, cultures, abilities, interests. It's about encouraging agency and looking at opportunities for children to make choices and inform decisions that impact on them. It's about including family and the community in decision making. It's about engaging children in stimulating play-based activities and experiences. And it also includes intentionality, responsive and child-directed learning. And it's driven by ongoing planning, assessment and critical reflection. And interestingly, when you look at the data, the element around critical reflection has always been the one that's most challenging. And I think as educational leaders, helping educators to unpack what critical reflection means. And there were some great examples in Lisa's presentation about critical reflection, not just navel gazing, not reflecting on, you know, they like the sand-picked toys, we'll add water next week, but really critically reflecting on pedagogy, but also on children's learning. So today, I thought that we would just unpack a bit of a toolkit to support you in your important roles, because nothing I've said so far will be new to any of you, I don't imagine. I recognise and acknowledge that in the room there's such a diversity and depth of knowledge, skill, wisdom and experience in terms of leadership, but also in terms of delivering quality programs. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that we're all on a unique journey, that there's no recipe, there's no one size fits all in terms of leadership. It's a unique journey that we are all on. But it does take a particular mindset to make that journey effective and worthwhile. A positive growth mindset is really important, seeing the opportunities that can-do approach looking at the positives and looking at the opportunities. It does take emotional intelligence. Communication is a really important part because that relationships is everything, really, when you think about our work with children, with families, with communities, with educators, with our teams. Relationships and communication are so important. And informing decision-making with a strong evidence base and looking at the contemporary research, looking at our colleagues and leaders in the sector like Lisa, who are generously sharing their insights into quality programs and looking at the rich research and the writing that are coming out from our sector is really important as well. There are lots of resources, as I mentioned, to support you in that leadership role, and there are lots of online courses as well, lots of TED Talks that are really inspiring and great to share with teams. There's some essential equipment that will help you in your role, but I think it's also really important, and it's, I think, one of the strengths of the National Quality Framework, is recognising the context and recognising that you probably know your children and your families and your communities better than anyone else, and recognising that context and coming up with a way of meeting the standards and implementing the frameworks that's genuine and authentic and relevant for your children and your families and your community, and giving children a voice and families and educators and the community a voice in terms of what that might look like. I think these are all important things to have in your toolkit. Some of you will remember the Educational Leader resource. I was absolutely privileged to be part of the working group that developed the National Quality Standard. And when we were talking about the educational leader position, we didn't want to be prescriptive about what that meant, because we recognised that everyone comes with their own strengths, their own interests and abilities, and we didn't want to limit by being prescriptive. But we took on board feedback from the sector. People were saying, well, it's fine not to be prescriptive, but we need some guidance in terms of what that looks like. So we developed the Educational Leader resource, and many of you will have used that resource. Have you? Have you engaged with it? Yeah. Did you find it helpful? Fantastic. It does have some really good resources, including some videos. And I would encourage you, if you haven't already listened to the videos, or if you have listened to them, maybe go back and listen to them again, because the message that they reinforce for me is about having courage to be yourself in that leadership space, that there is no one size fits all, as I said, and it is about building on your strengths and your interests and recognising the children, the families and the community that you work in. You probably will recognise some of the people in those videos as well. And, of course, we've got some additional resources, and thank you, Kylie. I notice there's some of them have been printed out. Some of those information sheets that are on our website have been printed out. And we're working on some additional information sheets to unpack the vision, the principles, the practices and the learning outcomes. And what that looks like in terms of the refreshed approved learning frameworks. But we've also got a Quest for Quality game, a card game. It's like Trivial Pursuit, but of course it's much better. So if you are going on a wineries weekend or something and you want to take a game to share with your friends and your family, try taking Quest for Quality. I did, but it didn't go over too well. I was trying to tell them, sounds fun for all the family. And there's cards on a whole range of different areas, including leadership. And, of course, the Guide to the National Quality Standard, what a great resource. It has just been updated, so we are encouraging people to, and I know it's hard, and I just had to clean out my office. We're moving offices. The building that we have been in for 8 years is about to be demolished. And I had my hard copy of the guide, and it was so hard to give it up. But if you use the electronic copy, which I use much more than I do the hard copy, you can do Control F and find exactly what you need. But also, it's just been updated. So March 1, an update, and we're expecting further updates later in the year, probably one in the middle of the year and another one towards the end of the year. So we would really encourage you to use the guide to the National Quality Standard. And it does underpin that principle about transparency. So when we work with authorised officers joining our sector, we use the guide, and we really encourage you to use the guide because there's no hidden agendas. It's all about being transparent and building opportunities to succeed. And sharing that, pulling out parts of the guide and sharing it with your team, I think is a really important tool and resource to use. As I said, we've got some fact sheets on the role of the educational leader. And they unpack and give some tips in terms of some general principles in terms of roles, like collaborating with educators and providing curriculum direction and guidance. It's about supporting educators to effectively implement the cycle of planning. And overwhelmingly, we hear from educators that they're a little anxious about the cycle of planning, and that was one of the reasons that that was strengthened in the refreshed approved learning frameworks. It's about leading the development and implementation of an effective educational program in the service. And it's also about ensuring that children's learning and development are guided by the approved learning frameworks. In my time, our place, for outside school hours care, are there many outside school hours care educators? Hey, fantastic! Terrific. And, of course, the early years learning framework for early childhood services. So in the Quest for Quality cards, there's one activity, and it asks you about what's your monument. So just thinking about you as an educational leader, it invites you to draw your monument. And I might ask you just to have a go. You don't have to share it with anyone, but just think about your leadership style and how you would like to be known. What you want someone viewing this to recognise your professional characteristics, your values and your traits and capabilities that you believe are important in terms of your professional and ethical identities and as educational leaders. So if I can invite you to grab your handbooks and have a go. You don't have to share it with anyone, but what do you see as your monument? So draw would the educators in your team use the same description of you? We're only just going to take a couple of minutes, but have a go at drawing what your monument to you as an educational leader would be. And while you're drawing that, think about what makes you believe this and whether your monument has changed over time. So has your leadership style changed over time? There's some very creative people in the room. Great to hear the rich conversation and discussion. And just looking around your monuments, in this room I can see such a diversity in terms of leadership styles and strengths. Something you might want to share back in your service. And it is important to remember that diversity. And please, if you haven't had a look at those videos, go back and listen to some of the education leaders talking about what's important to them in terms of their leadership styles. And of course, being a good, well-organised leader is really important. And there are many aspects in terms of organisational tasks. And I guess none of these will be a surprise to you in terms of researching, keeping abreast of the latest and contemporary research on pedagogy and children's learning and development, observing and supporting educators in your team, collaborating as a team, making shared decisions, empowering. And when I think back to my time in the sector, I was such a shy person. I wouldn't take on leadership responsibilities. I lacked confidence. And I just recognised when I got the phone call a decade and 1 week ago to say that I had the role of National Education Leader, the first person I got on the phone to, I was so excited, couldn't believe it, so excited, but the first person I picked up the phone to tell was a leader that I had worked with 25 years before, and I thanked her for her support in teaching me new skills, but also building my confidence, and she did that through collaboration. And I wasn't even aware at first that she was doing it. She gave me new roles, new tasks to take on in a non-threatening way. And she said, I didn't do anything. I said, you absolutely did. As a leader, she really collaborated and supported me in that way. Of course, as leaders, we've got tasks like reporting. But mentoring and supporting educators is such a empowering and rewarding, I think, opportunity that leaders have as well. And of course, planning is such an important part of those roles. And I just wanted to share with you, communicating is so important. And this is a funny little TED talk, but it made me think about the importance of communication.
Have you ever talked with a friend about a problem, only to realize that he just doesn't seem to grasp why the issue is so important to you? Have you ever presented an idea to a group, and it's met with utter confusion? Or maybe you've been in an argument when the other person suddenly accuses you of not listening to what they're saying at all. What's going on here? The answer is miscommunication, and in some form or another, we've all experienced it. It can lead to confusion, animosity, misunderstanding, or even crashing a multi-million-dollar probe into the surface of Mars. The fact is, even when face-to-face with another person, in the very same room, and speaking the same language, human communication is incredibly complex. But the good news is that a basic understanding of what happens when we communicate can help us prevent miscommunication. For decades, researchers have asked what happens when we communicate. One interpretation, called the transmission model, views communication as a message that moves directly from one person to another, similar to someone tossing a ball and walking away. But in reality, this simplistic model doesn't account for communication's complexity. Enter the transactional model, which acknowledges the many added challenges of communicating. With this model, it's more accurate to think of communication between people as a game of catch. As we communicate our message, we receive feedback from the other party. Through the transaction, we create meaning together. But from this exchange, further complications arise. It's not like the Star Trek universe, where some characters can Vulcan mind melt, fully sharing thoughts and feelings. As humans, we can't help but send and receive messages through our own subjective lenses. When communicating, one person expresses her interpretation of the message, and the person she's communicating with hears his own interpretation of that message. our perceptual filters continually shift meanings and interpretations. Remember that game of catch? Imagine it with a lump of clay. As each person touches it, they shape it to fit their own unique perceptions based on any number of variables like knowledge or past experience, age, race, gender, ethnicity, religion, or family background. Simultaneously, every person interprets the message they receive based on their relationship with the other person and their unique understanding of the semantics and connotations of the exact words being used. They could also be distracted by other stimuli, such as traffic or a growling stomach. Even emotion might cloud their understanding, and by adding more people into a conversation, each with their own subjectivities, the complexity of communication grows exponentially. So as the lump of clay goes back and forth from one person to another, reworked, reshaped, and always changing, it's no wonder our messages sometimes turn into a mush of miscommunication. But luckily, there are some simple practices that can help us all navigate our daily interactions for better communication. 1. Recognize that passive hearing and active listening are not the same. Engage actively with the verbal and nonverbal feedback of others and adjust your message to facilitate greater understanding. 2. Listen with your eyes and ears, as well as with your gut. Remember that communication is more than just words. 3. Take time to understand as you try to be understood. In the rush to express ourselves, it's easy to forget that communication is a two-way street. Be open to what the other person might say. And finally, 4, be aware of your personal perceptual filters. Elements of your experience, including your culture, community, and family, influence how you see the world. Say, this is how I see the problem, but how do you see it? Don't assume that your perception is the objective truth. That'll help you work towards sharing a dialogue with others to reach a common understanding together.
I don't know about you, but COVID has really made me rethink that too, in terms of, so much of our communication is done via Zoom or team meetings, and missing some of those cues that we would have if we were meeting close to face-to-face. And, of course, our services and our workplaces are so intrinsically social that communication is such an important part of our role, I think. And I also just wanted to quickly unpack a model that some of you may have already engaged with. It's in the educational leader resource, and it's developed by the work of Elizabeth Stanopoulos, and then she did some work way back in 2012 into leadership in early childhood. And in particular, she wrote an article called Reframing Early Childhood Leadership. And she identified 4 key elements that intersect and interact and form the basis of educational leadership. So she identified knowledge. It's really important to be knowledgeable and insightful. She identified professionalism. And I think, you know, our sector wants to be recognised as a profession, and we have to use professional language and be professional in our engagements. She talked about the importance of relationships that we've talked about a lot, and as well reflection. And this diagram is on page 9 of your workbooks. And I just wanted to, in the time left, quickly unpack each of the different dimensions of her model. So one is knowledge, and there's a lot of talk lately about being uncomfortable with uncertainty, because the reality is we're in an ever-changing world. If back in 2012 when we were implementing the National Quality Framework for the first time, who would have ever imagined we would have had lockdown as part of a global pandemic? So we do have to recognise that there is a level of uncertainty, and becoming more comfortable with that and being uncomfortable with uncertainty sometimes helps us to develop really creative and innovative responses. She also talks about knowledge being as part of that growing knowledge is building and accessing resources, using the most contemporary research, accessing journal articles, linking up with leaders in our sector. She talks about professionalism and our professional identity. And as part of that, it is that respectful relationships. And you'll notice that relationships keeps popping up throughout the diagrams and unpacking each of those different dimensions. Relationships is such an important part of that. She talks about, as professionals, leading practice. And that person that I mentioned, who I saw as an educational leader for me long before it was ever mandated, her mantra was, each one teach one. And she saw it as her professional responsibility to support the next generation of leaders. And she did that amazingly well. This model also really promotes that view of ethical practice in terms of professionalism as well. Relationship, having that relational trust, supporting and mentoring, because we can't mentor and support educators unless it's built on a foundation of trust. Collaborative inquiry, and we hear a lot about collaborative inquiry, and Lisa, I think you touched on it too, didn't you, in terms of working together as a team, being inquisitive, being curious and exploring new research, new ways of doing, new ways of thinking, new ways of knowing. Again, relationships comes into this dimension as well, and partnerships, those strong partnerships that we have with children, with families, with communities, but also with our team of educators. Reflection. She talks about meaningful reflection, not that sort of navel-gazing, but deep, meaningful reflection that's actually used to inform decisions or planning or support children's learning and development or make those connections with the community. And she talks about reflection being used as a tool for change, to inform change. She talks about generative listening and asking powerful questions, knowing when to ask the question, and using those powerful questions to gain further insights and knowledge. And again, building and accessing resources. There are a rich array available. Speaking of resources, we do have a number of resources on our CEQUAL website. And I would really encourage you to have a look on the website if you haven't already done so. And I feel like I skipped over one, but I didn't, did I? In my clicking through the slides. And also the We Hear You blog, because we also use that as an opportunity to tell stories and share insights from the sector. I think Gabby's contributed to our We Hear You blog, and I'm going to hit Lisa up before she leaves today. And I might hit some of you up as well if you're... it's a great opportunity to showcase the great things that happen in your services every day for children and families. And what I know from having been in this role for many years now is that educators and service leaders love to hear the stories from other educators and other service leaders. So please, we'd love to hear your stories, and we'd love to share them as well. As we mentioned, there are lots of resources to support you and lots that relate to some of the topics that we've talked about today, including critical reflection. And so just thinking about what you've heard this morning from Lisa, from Teresa, from Jess, from Sean, from Kylie, from this presentation, if you could just take a couple of moments to jot down three actions that are relevant, authentic, genuine in terms of your service, your context, that you want to take away to boost your educational leadership confidence toolkit. Just a couple of minutes to jot down three things. You don't have to share them. They're very personal to you in terms of your confidence. As a leader, something that you might want to follow up on. How did you go? Did you get three? Three things to follow up on? I just wanted to really thank you. What a great group you've been. It's been lovely. And thank you again, Sean, Claire, and Carly for inviting me. I just wanted to leave you with some words of wisdom that I've drawn on. And it was by an American, but don't hold that against him, John Quincy Adams. And he said, if your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. So thank you for the opportunity to share with you today, and best wishes in your leadership journey. And I look forward to hearing your stories and reflections.
Warm thanks to Rhonda. Thank you so much, Rhonda, for being a great leader of leaders in relation to introducing people to really important concepts of leadership. So thank you so much.